Today's program has been brought to you by Hearst Ranch, the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. For more information, visit HearstRanch.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
Yes, we are burning down the house. Yet again, on this, the 27th, January, 2013. I'm Curtis B. Wayne. As a follow-up to the conversation that we had last week with the architect Robert Lamb Hart, in which we talked about light, quality of light, presence of light, light as an activator of architecture, of our appreciation of space, I thought it appropriate to read a fairly obscure and beautiful bit of writing that Louis Kahn, Lou Kahn, the legendary American architect, spoke on the occasion of his having been awarded the American Institute of Architects Gold Medal, which is the highest honor that one might ever receive from one's peers, or the other awards that are out there, like the Pritzker. And there are many, many, many of these international architecture awards, committees of outside people. To receive the gold medal from the AIA is a very high honor from one's peers. And so, let's just get into it. Lou Kahn's 1971 gold medal speech, The Room, The Street, and Human Agreement. I have some thoughts about the spirit of architecture. I have chosen to talk about The Room, The Street, and Human Agreement. The room is the beginning of architecture. It is the place of mind. You are in the room with its dimensions, its structure, its light response to its character, its spiritual aura, recognizing that whatever the human proposes and makes becomes a life. The structure of the room must be evident in the room itself. Structure, I believe, is the giver of light. A square room asks for its own light to read the square. It would expect the light either from above or from its four sides as windows or entrances. Sensitive is the pantheon. The non-directional room dedicated to all religions has its light only from the oculus above, placed to invest the room with inspired ritual without favoritism. The entrance door is its only impurity. So powerful was this realization of appropriate space that even now the room seems to ask for its release to its original freedom. Of the elements of a room, the window is the most marvelous. The great American poet Wallace Stevens prodded the architect, asking, "What slice of the sun enters your room? What range of mood does the light offer from morning to night, from day to day, from season to season, and all through the years?" Gratifying and unpredictable are the permissions that the architect has given to the chosen opening on which patches of sunlight play on the jamb and sill and that enter, move, and disappear. Stevens seems to tell us that the sun was not aware of its wonder until it struck the side of a building. Enter your room and know how personal it is, how much you feel its life. In a small room, with just another person, what you say may never have been said before. It is different when there is more than just another person. Then, in this little room, the clarity of each is so sensitive that the vectors do not resolve. The meeting becomes a performance instead of an event with everyone saying his or her line, saying what has been said many times before. Still, in a large room, the event is of commonality. Rapport would take the place of thought. This room we are in now is big without distinctions. The walls are far away. Yet I know if I were to address myself to a chosen person, the walls of the room would come together and the room would become intimate. If I were now reading, the concern would be diction. If this room were the baptistry of Florence, its image would have inspired thoughts in the same way as person to person, architect to architect. So sensitive is a room. The plan is a society of rooms. The rooms relate to each other to strengthen their own unique nature. The auditorium wants to be a violin. Its envelope is the violin case. The society of room is the place where it is good to learn, good to work, good to live. Open before us is the architect's plan. Next to it is a sheet of music. The architect fleetingly reads their composition as a structure of elements and spaces in their light. The musician reads with the same overallness. The musician's composition is a structure of inseparable elements and spaces in sound. A great musical composition is of such entity that when played it conveys the feeling that all that was heard was assembled in a cloud over us. Nothing is gone, as though time and sound have become a single image. The corridor has no position except as a private passage. In a school, the girl walks across a hall, as in her own classroom, where she is her own teacher, observing others as others do. The hall asks for equal position with the library. The society of rooms is knit together with the elements of connection, which have their own characteristics. The stair is the same for the child, the adult, and the old. It is thought of as precise in its measures, particularly for the young boy who aspires to do the floors in no time flat, both up and down. It is good also to consider the stair landing as a place to sit near a window with possibly a shelf for a few books. The old man ascending with the young boy can stop here, showing his interest in a certain book, and thus avoid the explanations of infirmity. The landing wants to be a room. A bay window can be the private room within a room. A closet with a window becomes a room ready to be rearranged. The lightless corridor, never a room, aspires to be the hall overlooking the garden. The library, the work court, the rooms of study, the place of meeting, want to group themselves in a composition that evokes architecture. The libraries of all university schools sit well in a court entrance available to all its students as a place of invitation. The entrance courts and their libraries and the gardens and paths, knitting them there together, form an architecture of connection. The book, then, is an offering of the mind. The work court of a school of architecture is an inner space encircled by workshops available to construct building experiments. The rooms of study and criticism are of a variety of dimension and spaces in their light, small for the intimate talk and work, and large for making of full-size drawings and group work. Rooms must suggest their use without name. To an architect, a school of architecture would be the most honored commission. The street is a room of agreement. The street is dedicated by each house owners to this city in exchange for common services. Dead-end streets in cities today still retain this room character. Through streets, since the advent of the automobile, have entirely lost their room quality. I believe that city planning can start with realization of this loss by directing the driver and to reinstate the street where people live, learn, shop, and work as the room out of commonality. Today, we can begin by planting trees on all existing residential streets, by redefining the order of movement, which would give these streets back to more intimate use, which would stimulate the feelings of well-being and inspire unique street expression. The street is a community room. The meeting house is a community room under a roof. It seems as though one came naturally out of the other. A long street is a succession of rooms given their distinction, room for room, by their meaning of crossing streets. The intersecting street brings from afar its own developed nature, which infiltrates any opening it meets. One block in a stream of blocks can be more preferred because of its particular life. One realizes the deadlines of uninterested movement through our streets, which erases all delicacy of character and blots out its sensitive nature given to it of human agreement. Human agreement is a sense of rapport, of commonness, of all bells ringing in unison, not needing to be understood by example, but felt as an undeniable inner demand for a presence. It is an inspiration with the promise of the possible. Dissension does not stem from need, but from the mad outburst of frustration, from the hopelessness of the far-awayness of human agreement. Desire, not need, the forerunner of the new need, out of the yet not said and the yet not made, seems to be the roots of hope in dissension. How inspiring would be the time when the sense of human agreement is felt as the force which brings new images, such images reflecting inspirations and put into being by inspired technology. Basing our challenges on present-day programming and existing technologies can only bring new facets out of old work. The city from a simple settlement became the place of the assembled institutions. The settlement was the first institution. The tablets found their places. The carpenter directed the building. The thoughtful person became the teacher, and the strong one, the leader. When one thinks of simple beginnings which inspired our present institutions, it is evident that some drastic changes must be made which will inspire the recreation of the meaning. City is primarily an assembly of those places vested with the care to uphold the sense of a way of life. Human agreement has always been and will always be. It does not belong to measurable qualities and is therefore eternal. The opportunities which present its nature depend on circumstances and on events from which human nature realized itself. A city is measured by the character of its institutions. The street is one of its first institutions. Today, these institutions are on trial. I believe it is so because they have lost the inspirations of their beginning. The institutions of learning must stem from the undeniable feeling in all of us, a desire to learn. I have often thought that this feeling came from the way we were made, that nature records in everything it makes how it was made. This record is also in humanity, and it is this within us that urges us to seek its story involving the laws of the universe, the source of all material and means, and the psyche, which is the source of all expression. Art. The desire to learn made the first schoolroom. It was of human agreement. The institution became the modus operandi. The agreement has the immediacy of rapport, the inspiring force which recognized its commonality, and that it must be part of the human way of life supported by all people. The institution will die when its inspirations are no longer felt, and when it operates as a matter of course. Human agreement, however, once it presents itself as a realization, is indestructible. For the same reason, a person is unable to work below their level of comprehension. To explain inspiration, I like to believe that it is the moment of possibility when what to do meets the means of doing it. City planning must begin to be cognizant of the strength and character of our present institutions and be sensitive to the pulse of human relationship, which senses the new inspirations which would bring about new and meaningful institutions. Traffic systems, sociological speculations, new materials, new technologies are servants to the pulse of human rapport, which promises revelations yet not felt, but in the very core of human desires. New spaces will come only from a new sense of human agreements. New agreements which will affirm a promise of life and reveal new availabilities and point to human support for their establishment. I realized in India and Pakistan that a great majority of the people are without ambition because there is no way in which they are able to elevate themselves beyond living from hand to mouth, and what is worse, talents have no outlets. To express is the reason for living. The institution of learning, of work, of health, or recreation should be made available to all people. All realms of expression will be opened. Each singularity will express in his way. Availabilities to all can be the source of a tremendous release of the values locked in us of the unmeasurable in living, the art of living. One city can distinguish itself from the other by just the inspirational qualities that exist in sensing natural agreements as the only true source of new realizations. In that sense, the spaces where it is good to learn, to work, and to live may remain unexpressed if their nature is not redefined. It is not just enough to solve the problem. To imbue the spaces with newfound self-quality is a different question entirely. Solution is a how design problem. The realization of what precedes it. Now a word about inspired technology. The wall did well for humanity. The wall enclosed us for a long time until the man behind it, feeling a new freedom, wanted to look out. He hammered away to make an opening. The wall cried, "What are you doing to me? I have protected you. I have made you feel secure. And now you put a hole through me?" And the man said, "But I see wonderful things, and I want to look out. I appreciate your faithfulness, but I feel time has brought change." The wall was sad. The man realized something good. He visualized the opening as gracefully arched, glorifying the wall. The wall was pleased with its arch, and the man carefully made a jamb and a sill trimmed with fine stone. The opening became part of the order of the wall. Consider the momentous event when the wall parted and the column became. The world with its many people, each one a singularity, each group of different experiences revealing the nature of the human in varied aspects, is full of the possibility of more richly sensing human agreements from which new architecture will come. The world cannot be expected to come from the exercise of present technology alone to find the realms of new expression. I believe that technology should be inspired. A good plan demands it. A word about silence and light. A building being built is not yet in servitude. It is so anxious to be that no grass can grow under its feet, so high is the spirit of wanting to be. When it is in service and finished, the building wants to say, "Look, I want to tell you about the way I was made." Nobody listens. Everybody is busy going from room to room. But when the building is a ruin and free of servitude, the spirit emerges, telling of the marvel that a building was made. When we think of great buildings of the past that had no precedent, we always refer to the Parthenon. We say that it is a building that grew out of the wall with an opening. We can say that in the Parthenon, light is the space between the columns, a rhythm of light, no light, light, no light, which tells the tremendous story of light and architecture that came from the opening in a wall. We are simply extending what happened long ago. The beginning may be considered the most marvelous without precedent, yet its making was as sure as life. Light is material life. The mountains, the streams, the atmosphere are spent light. Material, non-conscious, moving to desire. A desire to express, conscious, moving from shadow to light, meeting at an aura, a threshold where the will senses the possible. The first feeling was of beauty. The first sense was of harmony, of humanity, an undefinable, unmeasurable, and measurable material, the maker of all things. At the threshold, the crossing of silence and light, lies the sanctuary of art, the only language of humanity. It is the treasury of the shadows, lying in that ambiance, light to silence, silence to light. Whatever is made of light casts a shadow. Light, the giver of presence, casts its shadow, which belongs to light. What is made belongs to light and to desire. When the astronauts went through space, the Earth presented itself as a marvelous ball, blue and rose in space. Somehow all the things on it, even the great achievements like, let us say, Paris, a great achievement, or London, all disappeared and became circumstantial works. Since I followed it and saw it that way, all knowledge left me as being unimportant. Truly, knowledge is an incomplete book without without being inside of us. You take from it to know something, but knowing cannot be imparted to the next person. Knowing is private. It gives singularity the means for self-expression. Desire is the thing not made, the roots of the will to live. I believe that the greatest work of a person is that part which does not belong to them alone. The discovery of oxygen does not belong to the discoverer. I invented a story about Mozart. Somebody dropped a dish in his kitchen and it made a hell of a noise. The servants jumped and Mozart said, "Ah, dissonance." And immediately dissonance belonged to music. And the way Mozart wrote, interpreting it, belonged to him. You cannot deny the great works of art because they are born out of the unmeasurable. The more deeply something is engaged in the unmeasurable, the more deeply it has this lasting value. Architects must not accept the commercial divisions of their profession into urban design, city planning, and architecture as though they were three different professions. The architect can turn from the smallest house to the greatest complex, or the city. Specialization ruins the essence of the revelation of the form with its inseparable parts realized only as an entity. A word about beauty. Beauty is an all-prevailing sense of harmony, giving rise to wonder, from it, revelation, poetry. Is it in beauty? Is it in wonder? Is it revelation? It is in the beginning, in first thought, in the first sense of the means of expression. A poem is in thought of beauty and existence, yet a poem is only an offering, which to the poet is less. A work of architecture is but an offering to the spirit architecture and its poetic beginning. That was Lou Kahn's 1971 AIA gold medal speech. If you're listening live and you'd like to call in and talk about your feelings about his poetic essay, please call in 718-497-2128. I'd like to take a very brief break and come back and talk a little bit more about our continuing investigation into the meaning of home in apropos of what Mr. Kahn has just expressed. Burning Down the House on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Curtis B. Wayne. Just read Lou Kahn's 1971 AIA gold medal speech. Very powerful. And he speaks of human agreement and agreements becoming institutions and spaces becoming institutions. And so, as I often do, this brings me back to thinking about the philological construct that we call home. What is home? I've worked on a lot of for-profit residential developments. And so often, home devolves into a formula that can be sold. There's a least common denominator of parts that must be satisfied. And so often, so little thought is given to that notion of presence, or of site-specific externalities which impinge upon, like light entering the space. And so it becomes a very slippery notion. What is home? Now, for some folks, home is no more than a place where one sleeps. There are plenty of people in New York City who spend all of their eating time outside of their home. They'll eat on the go. They'll get food from a food cart. They'll eat while they're walking. They'll eat while they're traveling in the subway or on a bus. They'll eat in a restaurant. For others, who have very large houses, home can best be found around the modern hearth, where there are parties always. There's a congregation of partygoers in the kitchen. So you might say, in that case, the home is the kitchen, not the grand double height great room, not the living room, not even the television viewing space, but the modern hearth gathered around the center of cooking. But I like to think of these other aspects of human habitation, especially Mr. Kahn's ideas about how the landing wants to become a room, how the hallway that has no windows wants or aspires to be the hall that overlooks the garden. These are all aspects of accommodating the human spirit, our human spirit in the real world. But so often, architectural design, it seems to me, devolves to a composition that has no sense of human agreement, no reason for being other than the fact that we can harness our marvelous technology to make forms for their own sake. How these forms appeal to the spirit, it seems to me, so frequently, is left unexplored. As if thinking about agreements or agreements of spirit or the institutions or the desire for that which is not yet made, but which involves the spirit, is just too difficult a thing. And that the spirit should be, or the human spirit should be, satisfied with the shape of things that are made for their own sake and not out of a sense of human agreement. I welcome your comments. You can reach us here at the station, info@heritageradionetwork.org. I want to leave you with a very lovely and highly architectural poem by William Butler Yeats. He wishes for the cloths of heaven. You know this one, don't you? If not, here it is. Had I the heaven's embroidered cloths, enwrought with golden and silver light, the blue and the dim and the dark cloths of night and light and the half-light, I would spread the cloths under your feet. But I, being poor, have only my dreams. I have spread my dreams under your feet. Tread softly, because you tread on my dreams. Thank you for listening. This has been Burning Down the House on Heritage Radio Network. Keep the faith.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.